I don't want to be a total conspiracy theorist here, but in some ways it's hard not to picture a back room with a bunch of guys smoking cigars, cackling their way to the bank.
Welcome to the Lions of Liberty podcast. Here is your host, your guide, your shining beacon of liberty, Mark Clare.
Welcome back, folks, to the Lions of Liberty podcast, where I, your host, your guide, your shining beacon of liberty, Mark Clare, as the man with a nice radio voice reminded you, strives to advance the ideas of liberty. And this is episode number 102. And before we get into the show today, I have to take a second to tell you guys about our sponsors at Health Excellence Select. If you're like me and you had just had it with your government-mandated health insurance, you need to look into the concept of health sharing and the fantastic healthcare package from our friends at Health Excellence Select. To learn more, head over to lionsofliberty.com/health. My guest today is an emergency room physician with over 20 years of experience in the field. He is also a member of Campaign for Liberty and a staunch libertarian, and he is here with me today specifically to offer a rebuttal to my recent interview with the science babe, Yvette Guinevere, which you can hear back in episode number 91. You can find all our past episodes at the archive, lionsofliberty.com/podcast. And this interview certainly sparked the ire of many of my listeners with some of her comments about GMOs, vaccines, and the FDA. And I'm pleased to welcome in today Dr. Mirand Sharma to discuss this with me. Mr. Sharma, welcome to the Lions of Liberty podcast.
Hi, Mark. Good to be with you.
It's great to have you here, Dr. Sharma. And as I mentioned at the top of the show there, you did contact me about the Science Babe interview. And I suggested that you come on the show and offer a rebuttal to some of her statements. But first, I want to get to know you a little bit better. And so my listeners can as well. So can you just describe how you first became interested in libertarian ideas and tell us a little bit about your involvement in the liberty movement?
Well, I think I was always a libertarian. I always was interested in world events and what's going on around me. And certainly 9/11 was a big catapult to my finding libertarianism. And at that time, I was in shock and I was in trauma as to what happened. And maybe like some of your listeners, I actually completely trusted the government to keep me safe and to keep me safe from harm and to deal with 9/11 effectively. And then when we started going into Iraq, which didn't at the time seem logical because they had nothing to do with 9/11, I really began to question a lot more about the war on terror in general. And then I discovered Ron Paul in 2008 when he was running for president, and he really turned my world upside down in terms of telling me things that I never heard of in terms of government, finance, the war on terror, and wars in general. And then I became involved in Campaign for Liberty, and it's been a huge step forward to me in my personal development in recognizing that I was already a libertarian but didn't know about it, and he was the spark that crystallized libertarian thoughts in my mind.
Yeah, and you know, that's a common thing I hear interviewing people on the show, and I hear from myself when I describe to other people how I kind of got into the liberty movement. That 9/11 issue comes up so many times. It really was a catalyst for many people, for myself included, that just made us realize that maybe the world and the government and a lot of the things we took for granted aren't really operating in the way that we thought they were. And a lot of times that can lead you down a path. And for many people, that it took someone like Dr. Paul to really be out there giving this message to really bring things together for people and realize there's actually a philosophy that describes a lot of the problems we're seeing with government and with society. So it's a common tale I've heard, Dr. Sharma, and you're another one in the line of great people that have been woken up by the work of Dr. Paul and other people that are outspoken on liberty issues. Now, as I mentioned at the top of the show, you did contact me about the Science Babe interview. So I'll just let you guide me a little here, Mirand. What were some of the biggest things that stood out to you that she brought up in our interview? And again, you guys can check this interview out. It is episode 91 by clicking back in your iTunes feed or your Stitcher feed or going over to the archive, lionsofliberty.com/podcast. So what stood out to you the most right away from the interview with her?
Well, what stood out with me was the imprecision of her language when it dealt with mandates of vaccines. At one point, she said that vaccines should be mandatory. And then at the other point, she said, well, we shouldn't put people in jail for not getting vaccines. That you know, using precise language when you're talking about libertarian thought, trying to convince other people that, you know, you're right or you have a different point of view is very important. And I found that language completely, for lack of a better word, unacceptable. One must be clear when talking about libertarian philosophy when it comes to a particular policy. Now, just for the record, I'm actually pro-vaccine. I have been vaccinated, and I have had my children vaccinated. However, had I learned more about what vaccines can do and some of the side effects, I'm not sure I would have had my children vaccinated the way they have been. But nevertheless, in some ways, I consider myself lucky because I have had no adverse outcomes from the vaccines, and neither have my children. And I think most children do okay. However, there are a sizable number of children and adults who do have adverse outcomes, but it's not about whether the vaccines are good, efficacious, or not good. It's about freedom. It's about one's ability to choose whether or not one gets vaccinated. And in my mind, that is the essence of libertarian philosophy when it comes to your own health and your own health care.
Sure, and I did get her to sort of clarify that statement because she had made the mandatory vaccine statement on another podcast on Austin Peterson's Freedom Report, and it really struck me just as it struck you of, well, how can you claim to be a libertarian when mandating, you know, injections into people against their will? So I did want to press her on that point in the interview a little bit, and once I brought up the idea, as you mentioned there, of would you actually send a mother to jail and that kind of thing, she did at that point then seem to back down a little bit, maybe realizing finally realizing the extent of that statement of calling something mandatory, because if you're going to call something legally mandatory, well, at the end of the day, that is the enforcement method. You will be put to jail. You might even have guns used against you to enforce that, and that's what we really have to be clear about. Like you said, we have to use precise language when we're talking about people, and that's why I wanted to press her on that word mandatory, and when she was really pressed on it, she did seem to slightly back down, although she still does believe they should be mandatory for anyone attending schools, and I'm out here in California. I'm not sure if you heard about this bill that's going through the California Senate right now. It did just receive approval from a Senate committee, and this bill would essentially require all school children, even children attending private school, to be vaccinated if they want to attend school. So what do you think about even bills like that? I mean, obviously we're all opposed to vaccinating mandatorily across the board, but what about when it comes to school children, and what would you tell parents that might have concerns about sending their children to a school where they might feel that certain children aren't vaccinated and therefore might pose a threat to them?
Well, that's the essence of the question here. Are unvaccinated people a threat to people who are vaccinated? And the question is almost self-contradictory, because if you're vaccinated, then what do you have to fear? If you are vaccinated against measles, then what do you have to fear against measles? And then when you look at the question more deeply, you find out that the vaccine against measles is not 100% effective. And then you realize that if you had measles as a child, which for the most part is a relatively benign disease, the immunity that you get from having measles as a child is lifelong. Once you get measles as a child, you will never get measles again. But if you get vaccinated, you get measles. That doesn't make any sense. And it makes the issue of vaccines in general quite murky, quite cloudy. It certainly is not black and white. You can come up with a hypothetical example of a deadly disease, but that's the hypothetical world. The real world, vaccines are not always 100% effective. And then you have to discuss in your own mind, which is the greater risk, the risk from getting the vaccine or the risk from getting the disease. And that's a risk that you as an individual should choose. You shouldn't have some kind of government mandating you to do things against your will. But then if you take it at a deeper level, you realize that there are companies that are aligned with the government who make profit on these decisions to mandate you. And then it becomes even all the more murky, and one has all the more reason to be suspicious.
You know, the one thing that always comes up when we talk about vaccines and when people express any sort of concerns about vaccines is this autism thing, the concept that the MMR vaccine may be responsible for autism. And people will always point to this debunked study. I'm sure you know which one I'm referring to. And then kind of call that the end of the case, as if that one study, maybe being poorly done, just disproves the concept that there is any relation to autism whatsoever. And I don't know if there is or isn't, but I don't know if you have any thoughts on that, about the relation to autism. Or is your concern over vaccines more just some of the many other various reports of nerve diseases and that sort of thing that have been reported by many parents?
Well, again, my primary concern is freedom. My primary Right. concern is the individual choosing for him or herself what they want to go into their bodies and their children's. But regarding vaccines, I do have these articles here that I can briefly talk about,
sure,
which would make one suspicious for vaccines. And I also have other talking points regarding why one should be suspicious of the FDA and why one should be suspicious of GMOs, all things that the science babe talked about. Now, I have no qualm with her wanting to get vaccines or wanting to consume GMOs. Again, my primary concern is freedom. But let me talk about the reasons why one could be suspicious of vaccines. And you mentioned autism. And I'm not sure how much people know, but there was a CDC whistleblower regarding the increased incidence of autism after the MMR vaccine. And this was a statement by a doctor, a PhD, by the name of William Thompson. And this was regarding a 2004 article regarding the possibility of a relationship between the MMR vaccine and autism. And he basically confessed to faking the data. And I'll just briefly read what he said. He said, "My name is William Thompson. I am a senior scientist with the Center for Disease Control and Prevention, where I have worked since 1998. I regret that my co-authors and I omitted statistically significant information in our 2004 article published in the Journal of Pediatrics. The omitted data suggests that African-American males who received the MMR vaccine before age 36 months were at an increased risk for autism. Decisions were made regarding which findings to report after the data were collected, and I believe that the final study protocol was not followed." Now, to me, that's a big bombshell. Here you have a scientist that works for the CDC coming out saying that they pretty much committed fraud in this publication of this article. That's a reason why people would be suspicious. And to just kind of derogatorily talk about people being anti-vaxxers or vaccination truthers and completely dismissing them, I think is the wrong tone to take. And personally, I think that's what the science babe did. Her tone was quite derogatory. Again, I think vaccines have been a good idea for me. Had I known more, I maybe would have changed something, but I'm okay. But I'm certainly not going to ridicule anyone who chooses not to vaccine because of the fear of autism, let alone other side effects of these vaccines. And let me just go on. Merck Pharmaceuticals was actually sued for faking mumps vaccine efficacy. Two former Merck virologists, and their names were Stefan Crawling and Joan Wielkowski, they said that Merck faked its tests regarding the efficacy of the vaccine against mumps by spiking blood tests with animal antibodies. Now, this is still in litigation, but that's a pretty big charge by two insiders in the Merck pharmaceutical company. And Merck, by the way, is also the maker of the Gardasil vaccine, which has a lot of problems with it and which I would not recommend. And I am not letting my sons get that vaccine. I don't have any daughters, but it's now marketed towards boys.
Are they actually marketing Gardasil towards boys as well? I didn't even know that.
They are marketing it towards boys because boys can also carry the human papillomavirus, which is a virus linked to cancer. And it's thought that the protection of boys will protect girls. And they are giving this to boys as young as 9 years old. And it is just
9 years old.
Yes. And it is. I mean, you're giving a 9 year old boy a vaccine against a sexually transmitted disease. Moreover, it's been questioned that the efficacy of the Gardasil vaccine wears off in about 4 to 5 years. So 5 years time, the boy is, 14, 15. Hopefully he's not sexually active yet. But even if he is at that age, the Gardasil vaccine would have worn off. So the Gardasil vaccine, in my opinion, is terrible. I would never give my children that. I wouldn't take it myself. But again, you as an individual, you have to weigh the risk and the rewards of this vaccine. So yes, the Gardasil vaccine made by Merck Pharmaceuticals, in my opinion, is very flawed. There was another study regarding autism in the University of Pittsburgh that showed that monkeys who get the same vaccination schedule as human beings had abnormalities in parts of their brain as measured by MRIs and PET scans that are consistent with autism. Again, that's a very concerning finding. And findings like these make people genuinely suspicious of vaccines. I can go on and say that the CDC actually admitted that 98 million Americans who received the polio vaccine in an 8-year span, this is in the 50s and 60s, got this vaccine that was contaminated with a cancer virus. The cancer virus is known as SV40, and it is being detected in tumors that are being removed from people. And it was found that the technique to inactivate the poliovirus in this vaccine by means of formaldehyde did not reliably kill this SV40 virus that was contaminated in this virus. That's a huge number of people, 98 million people. I don't know if we'll be able to ever determine how many of those people got cancer from the SV40 virus, but it's incidents like these that you don't hear in the mainstream media, maybe the science babe didn't hear about them either, that would make one question whether or not one should get a vaccine.
Sure, and it seems like Yvette seems to really rely on, she always references the studies, quote unquote, but I think a lot of these studies come from these same organizations that also seem to put out some of these contradictory studies or some of these stories that come out that might show that there actually are some problems. You know, I mean, as you said, the CDC, they run all these studies regarding vaccines, and yet they also admit that 98 million Americans received this SV40 virus in a polio vaccine. So even trusting the institutions, you find some things that come out that make you question things. And then I think to me, the biggest thing is if there's so much safety in vaccines, and it's not really about whether the vaccines work in terms of preventing the diseases. I think most of us agree that technology itself is neither a good or a bad thing. It is something that we've proven can work. The issue comes in when you have these institutions such as the CDC and the FDA, which are essentially monopolies over our food and medical industry, and you realize that these organizations have different motives than necessarily simply the benign motive of protecting everyone's health. And that will apply a little bit to the conversation about genetically modified foods as well. So why don't we move on to genetically modified foods? I think some of your biggest problems about Yvette's approach to GMOs and the idea that, look, they're all safe. There have been numerous studies done on them. She claims that there are no real legitimate scientific studies that show any sort of harmful effects from GMOs. So what would you say to that?
Well, just getting back to what you said earlier about the CDC and the FDA, in a free and non-coercive society, or that is a libertarian society, I don't think the FDA and CDC would exist. What you would have is private companies that would try to stay in business based on their reputation, you know, rate drugs, rate the efficacy of treatments, and then give this information to the public, sort of like a Consumer Reports for pharmaceuticals or a Consumer Reports for medical treatments. You don't need the monopoly force of the FDA or the CDC to do this. Moreover, nor do I find any evidence in any sayings in the Constitution regarding the authorization for the CDC and the FDA. So, yes, the FDA is very flawed, but the FDA, in my opinion, shouldn't even exist. But if it's going to exist, and we have to deal with the reality, it should exist only as an advisory role. You know, it should not exist in this mandatory role. I mean, it's just ridiculous to see FDA agents come out with guns raiding a farm because it sells raw milk and raw cheese. I mean, it advertises those to its customers. The customers know what they're getting, and yet the FDA has to come in with guns. Totally, totally, totally ridiculous. But getting back to what you asked about the GMOs, there is an FDA connection, and that connection is with Michael Taylor. And for those who don't know, Michael Taylor is an attorney. And he's the senior advisor to the FDA commissioner. At least that was the last post that I found. But in the 1970s, Michael Taylor worked with the FDA. In the 1980s, he represented Monsanto. And then in 1994, he became head of the Food Services Inspection Service, which is part of the USDA. Then in 1996, he became the vice president of public policy at Monsanto, and in 2009, he went back to being a senior advisor for the FDA commissioner. That does not pass the smell test. That's like Halliburton and Dick Cheney. You know, you have these corporations with this revolving door of senior positions in government, making public policy, shuttling back and forth, and you know that there's something afoul there. And in fact, there really is something afoul. Because Mother Jones released an article in 2013 that talked about these documents that were, I guess, hacked from the State Department by WikiLeaks. And this is what the WikiLeaks document shows. And this is a quote, "A concerted strategy to promote agricultural biotechnology overseas to compel countries to import biotech crops and foods that they do not want and lobby foreign governments, especially those in the developing world, to adopt the policies to pave the way to cultivate biotech crops, unquote. So why are U.S. taxpayers being used to secretly lobby foreign governments to buy Monsanto products? This is crony capitalism at its worst. And this is another reason to suspect why someone may want to avoid consuming GMOs, why people are in favor of labeling GMOs, yet Monsanto always actively lobbies against the people labeling GMOs. Labeling GMOs doesn't prevent someone from buying it. It just makes the consumer more informed. And moreover, there was a GMO study, a study about GMOs in the Journal of Food and Chemical Toxicology that fed a GMO diet to rats. And 50% of the males and 70% of the females who were fed a GMO diet suffered premature deaths when fed a diet of GMOs. And this is another reason to be suspicious of GMOs. If you want to consume GMOs, go ahead. But people should be informed. People have the right to know what they're consuming in their body. And I think practical legislation to force companies to label something as a GMO is a good idea. But and now what's interesting is I am finding companies that already have non-GMO products in that who are taking the step of labeling non-GMO. And I think that's great.
Dr. Sharma, I want to explore your statement there that you made just a minute ago regarding forcing companies to label their GMOs, because, you know, as you discussed, you don't support the FDA, you don't support CDC, and, you know, in a free society, you would see those as being at best advisory boards and not really anything that would enforce certain policies upon companies or people or that kind of thing. But, you know, how do you take that and then justify forced labeling of GMOs? Because do you think that the label GMO is in some way too broad? I mean, in many ways, almost everything we eat has been genetically modified at some point in the process over the last several hundred years. So how do you reconcile that, the idea of forcing labeling of GMOs, with your sort of your libertarian beliefs of free markets and that kind of thing?
Well, I guess I would use the market. I would use market forces to compel companies to label products GMOs, if indeed they are GMOs. Perhaps there could be different levels of GMOs, or perhaps there can be disclaimers about this particular kind of GMO. But in a truly free and non-coercive society, consumers would want GMO-free food, or maybe they would want GMO food, and you would find companies unable to sell their products without labeling them because the market forces of people wouldn't consume their products without the proper labels on them. So you could use the market forces to compel companies to label or not label things.
So when you say compel, you don't really mean government force. You just mean allow the market to work, allow the market to essentially force these companies to label their foods. Whereas right now, I believe that many companies are sort of even banned from labeling one way or the other. And that might have changed. I'm not sure, because I do see, like you said, some companies that do brand themselves as non-GMO. But I believe the FDA does has restrictions on what can actually be called, you know, non-GMO or not. Do you know anything about that?
You know, I don't. But again, the FDA shouldn't exist, or the FDA, if anything, should be nothing more than an advisory role. And from a constitutional perspective, the labeling of GMOs or not GMOs should be delegated to the states. It's a state issue, not a federal issue. And I just recently found out that the state of Vermont actually compelled all of its GMO producers to label products as GMOs, which I think is a good idea. Now, one can say, well, that's not very libertarian. Well, I think it's more libertarian because at least you have Vermont doing it and not the federal government. But again, if we had a truly non-coercive free society, consumers would demand food labeling just like they would demand, you know, iPhones or Androids or what, any other product. They would demand safety in the product that I think either private organizations can either rate, just like the Motion Picture Association of America, or companies would voluntarily label. And if the company committed fraud, then the company would be subject to a lawsuit. So you could have this totally free market, although I must say I am sympathetic with people in Vermont, and I'm kind of glad that at least they can, you know, have food that's either labeled GMO or not labeled GMO. And if you're a company that works in Vermont and you don't want to be participating in that thing, then you know, move to another state. That's the way the federalist system works in the United States. And even though it's not perfectly libertarian, it's a philosophy or a system of government that we can all, I think, at least live with, because at least you'll have 50 different policies around the country rather than one overarching policy by a corrupt FDA.
Why do you think Monsanto goes through so much effort and spends so much money, millions and millions of dollars these guys spend fighting labeling, if the fact is that what they purport, that all GMOs are completely safe and have been completely tested and that there are no issues there? I mean, I don't want to be a total conspiracy theorist here, but in some ways it's hard not to picture a back room with a bunch of guys smoking cigars cackling their way to the bank. But I tend to think that things aren't quite as conspiratorial as that. But I mean, do you think that they just know that some of the stuff can be dangerous and don't care? Or I mean, because to me, ultimately, if the stuff is dangerous, that at some point this is going to come out. And to me, if I'm trying to provide food to consumers, I don't want to poison my clients. So why do you think that some people in Monsanto might view things differently?
I don't know. I mean, one can only speculate because I'm not in the Monsanto boardroom. But all I know is that Monsanto is using the arm of government to protect their own interests. And that alone is enough to want to make me be suspicious of any Monsanto product.
Sure, because if your products are as legitimate and safe as you purport, why do you need these certain government protections? Why do you need to stack the FDA with all of your past and future employees and that kind of thing? And if nothing else, even if that is legit, because many people might say, well, hey, I mean, it makes sense. If you're going to have an FDA, you should have experts in the field. And many of those experts in the field, of course, worked for the largest provider of these foods in Monsanto. So in some ways, it might make perfect sense for these people to be in those advisory roles. But the problem is, it's not an advisory role. It is a coercive organization, as we've discussed, and it is imposed on every single American, whether or not we consent to its basically advice or not. And as we said, that's the real source of the problem, the lack of freedom and the coercion being used in the execution of these policies. If they were simply advisements or simply recommendations, yeah, we might still have a problem that it's that the organization is coercively funded in our current structure, but that it wouldn't be as much of an issue if they were simply doing that. But it's really the enforcement mechanism that I think you and I agree is the real problem here. And these coercive institutions as a whole, as you mentioned on a few times, I think these are the reasons that there was so much suspicion for GMOs and vaccines. I mean, it might be the case that vaccines and GMOs are completely and utterly safe, but if that's the case, why is there so much seemingly shady cover-up and seemingly revolving door between companies like Monsanto and the FDA, between Merck, between vaccine companies and the CDC and HHS? You know, there are so many reasons to be suspicious that it's hard not to be suspicious. So I would tend to agree with you that we can't just deride anyone who questions this stuff, especially with all the stuff that has been coming out there. And at the end of the day, what it comes down to is not the technology itself, not whether the medicine works, not whether the vaccine works, not whether GMOs are safe, but it's the freedom for individuals to make those choices for themselves. Dr. Sharma, I've got just a couple more topics to touch on here, but first, I've got to touch on the concept of health sharing, which I discovered last year when I became frustrated with the insane costs and skyrocketing deductibles from my Obamacare-mandated health insurance. And now our friends at Health Excellence Select have put together an amazing package to help you navigate your way through the murky medical system by combining health sharing with personalized healthcare assistance, 24/7 phone access to board-certified physicians, and all sorts of discounts on dental and vision. They even have a website that works, guys. It costs nothing to hop onto a free webinar and learn more about this fantastic concept. To find out more, head on over to lionsofliberty.com/health. Dr. Sharma, one more thing I want to touch on. I mean, you had mentioned there that in a free or a libertarian society, as you view it, there would not be an FDA, there would not be a CDC. So how do you kind of see a free society forming institutions that would sort of provide these advisory roles? How would organizations like that be funded? I mean, many people might say, well, I might agree with you in theory, but without the FDA, without the CDC, who is going to keep us safe? Who is going to make sure that we're not just eating poison and injecting poison into ourselves? Although, you know, many people might say we already are.
When you talk about a libertarian society, one thing you don't talk about is a utopian society. Bad things will still happen. Accidents will still happen. But I think in a libertarian society, what would probably happen in a free and non-coercive society is you'd have these advocacy groups that would stringently test the safety of certain products, whether it's food or automobiles or airplanes or whatever. And if these advocacy groups give the product or the company their seal of approval, that in some ways would be a proxy for an organization like the FDA. However, these individual seal of approval companies would have great interest in keeping up their reputation because their services themselves would be determined by how the general population feels about their reputation for providing these stamps of approval or the seals of approval. And so you would have these companies paying these seal of approval companies to ask for their stamp of approval. And like a Consumer Reports, for example, or like an Underwriter Laboratories. And if this seal of approval company would not give the maker of the product a seal of approval, then, you know, consumers could still buy the product, but maybe they'd be more reluctant to buy the product because it didn't have this safety. So all of these things could be done by private companies, and you would have makers of products enlist the services of Underwriter Laboratories or other equivalents thereof so that they could market to consumers better.
Yeah, I think at the end of the day, we agree that, you know, much of the suspicion that arises from GMOs, vaccines, and that kind of thing emanates ultimately from the fact that these are coercive institutions. And the only difference in a free society is that people wouldn't be forced to obey the sort of will of these institutions. Institutions would naturally spring up and naturally be funded by individuals and by companies because people don't want to take stuff that hurts them in general. So when you take away the monopoly organizations, the FDA, the CDC, that currently basically have control those markets of efficacy and testing vaccines and GMOs and that sort of thing, once you remove that and allow the market to replace it, you're going to have a much more open system and a system where people can put a lot more faith in the institutions than we have now. And certainly now there is great reason, as you laid out in our show today, to at a minimum be suspicious of a lot of the things that come out of these institutions. So Dr. Sharma, I do thank you for coming on the show today and providing this perspective for us. Before I let you go, I will let you give your final thoughts on everything we've discussed today.
Well, just in general, when I look at the big picture of government and healthcare, the government right now, the federal government of the United States, is probably involved right this very second in killing someone, bombing someone, or providing the finance for another country to bomb someone, to kill someone, or to make someone else's life miserable by imposing sanctions. So why would you entrust your healthcare to that same institution that is so ruthless, immoral, and murderous? Don't have a blind spot to the government doing one thing good and doing something else that you don't agree with, but you're willing to take the good. I mean, to me, that's just not looking at the big picture. A free and non-coercive society would have institutions that would be governed to be moral based on market forces. Now you have a government that's killing people, bombing people. Oh, but they also say that vaccines are good for you. I mean, just step back and look at the big picture, and I think you can get more focused on what really counts in a free and non-coercive society, not government bureaucrats and politicians telling you what's good and what's bad for you.
Dr. Sharma, thank you so much once again for coming on the show. I really do appreciate your time. Do you have like an email or a social media or anything that people that might hear this might want to reach out to you?
If people want to email me, I have a new email address. It's Dr. Sharma at use.startmail.com. It's Dr. Sharma, DrSharma, at use.startmail.com.
Dr. Moran Sharma, thanks once again for coming on the show. I really do appreciate it.
Thanks a lot, Mark. Great job.
Thanks a lot. Take care.
Bye-bye.
All right, guys. I hope you enjoyed my talk with Dr. Moran Sharma. I really do appreciate him coming on the show and discussing these issues with me because, you know, we can debate back and forth all day long. The efficacy of GMOs, the efficacy of vaccines, the safety concerns, the health benefits, the benefits to many people who might be going hungry. I'm certainly not against the concept of genetically modifying foods. I'm certainly not against the concept or the technology of vaccines. I think it's very clear that vaccines can prevent disease. The question is not necessarily whether GMOs and vaccines and that kind of thing are helpful or dangerous. The real question, as Dr. Sharma pointed out several times, is a question of freedom, a question of choice. And in order for people to make fully informed decisions, we need to have an open system. Now, to me, there is no more open system than the free market, a true free market. Of course, we don't have that today. We don't have anything resembling a true free market. If anything, we have a cartelized market where a few companies tend to control everything, and they do so largely through government regulations and through controlling those regulatory bodies, such as the FDA and the CDC. Now, that doesn't mean that everything that comes out of the CDC or the FDA is a grand conspiracy to assist certain companies. It doesn't mean that everything that comes out of them is not either. We have to recognize conflicting interests when they are apparent. And as Dr. Sharma pointed out, some of the stuff just does not pass the smell test. When you got a guy like Michael Taylor bouncing in and out from the FDA to Monsanto, from Monsanto back to the FDA and back again, something might be amiss. There are reasons to be suspicious when we don't have an open system, when we have a somewhat secretive system. Now, we might say it's not secretive, but when you don't have an open market, it is secretive. And when you have a vaccine court, which I discussed with Ben Swan, I've discussed with Dr. Mary Ruart, I'll link to those interviews as well. We have a vaccine court in this country that does not operate in the open as a normal court. It's a court that operates essentially in secret. It has secret non-public proceedings where payouts are handed to the victims of vaccine injuries, or at least the claimed victims. Now, many people, such as Yvette Guinevere, claimed that these injuries aren't necessarily related to the vaccines. It's just a way for the companies to deal with the problem, the PR problem, of people claiming a connection between their child's injury and the vaccine. Now, I'm not a doctor, and I'm not going to pretend to be. Well, maybe sometimes, but we don't need to talk about that now. But that's why I was glad to have a real doctor on to bring his perspective, because while I might not be that credible to some people, hey, this guy, Dr. Sharma, has been a doctor for over 20 years, and I have a good feeling that he does a lot of research into this stuff, as you heard on the show. He does not passively just accept the dictates of the FDA and the CDC as fact without doing further research. What we ultimately need to really make informed decisions on this stuff is openness, and you're only going to get openness when you have a free society, when you have a free system where people are free to make their own decisions on these things, and that's what I promote each and every week, twice a week, as a matter of fact, here at the Lions of Liberty podcast, and of course, over at our website, lionsofliberty.com. Did you know we had a website too, folks? Of course you did. You're the biggest fans ever. But come on over. We have so much going on over at lionsofliberty.com, and there are so many ways you can connect with us at our social media, facebook.com/lionsofliberty, on our Twitter, @lionsofliberty. You can even join our little Facebook forum to interact with our contributors, interact with me, pose questions for our guests. We'll link to that in the show notes for this show, which you can find at lionsofliberty.com/102, where we'll have all sorts of information about everything we discussed in this episode today. And this coming Thursday, we will see the return of
Rand Pluses
and Minuses.
Rand Pluses and Minuses with Brian McWilliams. That's right, our podcast where we go through the statements, the actions, the comings and goings of libertarian-ish presidential candidate Rand Paul. So be sure to come back for that this coming Thursday. And until then, folks, live long and live free.
Head of Editing and Mastering is John Dahlberg.